Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 187 of A True Crime Couple. I'm Kay.
And I'm John.
We hope that you're all doing amazing, and we would like to start this episode as we usually do, thanking you for being the perfect listeners, as you always are. We appreciate everything you do to support us. At the end of this episode, we'll be thanking our new Patreon supporters, so if that's you, stay tuned. If you want to join Patreon, get ad-free episodes and 2 full-length bonus episodes a month, you can join Patreon on the app or visit the website patreon.com/truecrimecouple. We also encourage you to leave us a review and tell a friend about us. And just one more thing. Don't forget to send in your listener stories to us at truecrimecouple@gmail.com. Anything you got, whether it's true crime related, supernatural, or just plain creepy, we want to hear it. And we want to talk to you about it.
And I want to have my pants fly off from being so scared.
Yeah, we always get super scared. We always get the best story. So we're
we really do.
Excited to see what comes our way this year. Okay, well, we know what you're here for. So, John, do you want to hear something crazy?
Of course.
As all news does in a high school, rumors of what happened to bright, beautiful, athletic Emma Walker spread like wildfire. Some said that she had died by suicide, but most couldn't believe that. Her life was perfect. She had a great boyfriend. She was a cheerleader, a good close circle of friends. It just didn't seem like it could be true. But if Emma Walker did not harm herself, it meant that something far more sinister happened, that someone had wanted to hurt her. Now, that didn't sound too far from the truth, because in the days prior to her death, odd things had been happening to the 16-year-old girl.
Police say the suspect, 31-year-old Jeffrey Dahmer, has confessed to the killings of 11 people whose remains were found in his apartment.
We are all evil in some form or another, are we not?
Lock your doors, lock your windows. If you have the ability to provide additional security devices, then by all means do so.
Fountain City, Tennessee, a suburb of northern Knoxville, is home to Central High School. And like any other true southern towns, football reigns supreme on Friday nights in the fall. Residents from the town, young and old, all come out to cheer on the Bobcats. And right there helping them do so were the varsity cheerleaders, none of whom shined as bright as radiant junior Emma Walker. Everyone was friends with Emma. She was kind, had a wonderful sense of humor, was really smart on the honor roll, and broke all the stereotypes that surround high school cheerleaders. From what her friends and family have said about her, she was warm and loved by everyone. On the morning of Monday, November 21st, 2016, the sun was just beginning to rise at 6 a.m. over the perfect suburban neighborhood that the Walker family called home. Jill Walker had begun her morning routine, which included waking up her teenage son and daughter for school. She went into her daughter Emma's room to put something on her vanity that Emma had left out. And that was when she noticed her daughter was still sleeping, so she called her name. Usually, according to Jill, that would wake Emma up right away, and she would go about getting ready for school. But on that morning, things were different. When Emma didn't wake up, her mother went over to her and shook her leg, but the action elicited no response. Jill got concerned. She touched Emma's face and felt that she was cold to the touch. She tried to shake her awake again, but still there was no response. Upon her second and deeper examination of her daughter, she saw what looked like vomit on her daughter's pillow beside her. This prompted her to check her daughter's pulse. She was unable to find one. Her husband had already gone to work, but she needed someone, She was hysterical at this point and screamed for her son to come into the room. Together, they continued to try and wake Emma up, but nothing worked. Jill Walker called 911. On the call, Jill and her son could both be heard screaming in pain and panic. Jill told the dispatcher that her daughter was not breathing, and when she checked, there was no pulse. She explained that her tongue was hanging out of her mouth, and she didn't understand what was happening. She was just trying to wake her up for school, and then the screaming continued. It's a heartbreaking 911 call and the worst moment of Jill Walker's life. First responders and the Knox County Sheriff's Department arrived at the scene and confirmed that 16-year-old Emma Walker was dead.
That's so sad. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, waking up, you know, and checking in on your kid and then to find a scene like that must be so devastating.
Right, when you just think they're sleeping and then you realize something more had happened.
Yeah, and more importantly, like what led to her being found that way? Like, that's going to be really interesting to figure out what happened here.
Yeah, and in the 911 call, which you could go and hear on your own, but it's truly a devastating call because you could hear the panic and the confusion on Jill's voice and in the agonizing cries of her brother in the background.
Yeah, because in that moment, nothing makes sense. Like, how can she be dead?
Yeah. It's calls like that that I listen to, and I know I might get some flack for this, that truly make me feel like there are times when you can listen to a 911 call and be like, wow, the family truly was not involved in this crime.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, there's definitely, you know, truly there are cases where you do say that, and, you know, and they obviously have no involvement. But I think it's just because the ones that have been publicized so much, even if it's like 10 cases, let's just say, I know there's more, but let's just say 10 cases that have been so blown up that it just makes all of us automatically be like, nah, they're freaking lying. You know, like,
I know.
So it's hard.
Well, because they're over scrutinized, I think.
Yeah, sure. Sometimes 10 cases can make the next 100, you know, uncredible, not credible at all.
That's very true. So detectives were called in to what was initially being described as a teenage suicide, a presumption that was made because of the vomit that was said to have been present on Emma's pillow, and the fact that when Jill had been asked if her daughter could have taken anything, in her confusion and panic, she said she might have, that she didn't know, because she was truly confused what was happening in her house. When the detective assigned to the case arrived at the Walker home on Cardindale Drive, he went directly to Emma's bedroom, which was located in the back left of the home. Upon later reflection, the detective said that when he first saw Emma, it looked to him like she was sleeping, especially based on the position of her body and the fact that she was still under the blankets. As we've covered in other cases, especially the last episode we released, episode 186, even if someone's death is called in as a suicide, it must be investigated, especially if it is an unattended death. The crime scene technicians were able to help the detective figure out what had caused the death of this healthy, seemingly perfect teenage girl. In a surprising turn of events, they were able to determine that the substance that had been found on Emma's pillow was not vomit, but brain tissue.
What?
This prompted a closer inspection of her body, which led them to the discovery of a gunshot wound just above her left ear.
Holy crap. So this went from, oh yeah, she could have, because I'm sure they were like, oh, she probably took pills and then, or something of that effect.
Yes, that was the presumption because it, at first, to what her, it appeared to her mother like it was vomit on the pillow.
Right. Well, yeah, because a normal person does not know what brain matter looks like.
Yeah, I hope I never find out.
No. Oh, my God. This is crazy. Okay.
Yeah. Now, that fact could still coincide with a suicide.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
However, if that were the case, there would be a gun next to or near Emma, and there was none.
So they're trying to say that the body was like maybe in a perfect, like in a perfect position, you know, where she couldn't have shot herself because it would have looked a lot different.
It would have looked totally different, and there would be presence of a gun guns don't just disappear on their own.
Exactly. It could be on, it would be on the floor or something else.
Or on the bed next to her. So this led them to believe that this was a homicide.
Some foul play going on here.
Yes.
Strange. But now, wait a minute. this is actually incredible because we're dealing with a gunshot victim now that's now deceased in their house on their bed.
Correct.
So now the question is, number one, how did nobody hear the gunshot? Which then furthers the point, okay, was this done somewhere else and they returned her body to her bed?
That can't be the case because the brain matter is on the pillow. And that's a result from the gunshot wound happening while she was laying on the pillow.
So then that would mean that maybe she had someone in her room that night?
She had to have been shot in her room. And because of the positioning of her body, most likely while she was sleeping.
Maybe the pillow was used as a way to muffle the gunshot? I don't know.
No, because the pillow stayed underneath her head.
Well, that's right, because she was laying down.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there could be other pillows in the room, but they would have gunshot wounds.
This is crazy. Okay.
The pillow would have gunshot wounds. They would have like a bullet hole through it.
I know what you mean. But wow. I mean, obviously more questions than answers here.
It's a big mystery at the beginning of this investigation. Definitely, without a doubt. Now, the case of Emma Walker is a case that people might be familiar with. I always try to like find cases that are really unknown, but the Emma Walker case has been covered by other podcasts. So I think it's interesting because some people will know what happened. So they're going to find your reactions very interesting as we go.
Or annoyed because.
No, they won't be annoyed with you.
Well, I've never heard of this. So, I mean, this is interesting. I mean, I feel really bad for this family, but I'm trying to like figure out a way, like, are we dealing with someone that did the family do this? Did someone from the outside do this? It seems to be already very complex.
The mystery begins.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. What we're going to do here is we're going to take a quick break to talk about the sponsor of today's show. A girl had been shot in her bed as she slept based on her positioning under the covers. And the only people she had been in the house with were her family members. So that was where the detectives wanted to start with their investigation. The first person that was officially questioned by the detectives was Mark Walker, Emma's father. He was asked about the night prior and his morning. Had he noticed anything different? Did anything strange happen? And he said that actually it had. Mark recalled that he had been awoken in the middle of the night by what sounded like a slamming door. He decided to get up and check on things in the house. He walked around the house. The first place he went was to his daughter Emma's room. He peeked in and saw that she was still sleeping. He then went into his son's room and saw that he was also still sleeping soundly. Everything appeared to be fine, so he decided to go back to bed. He said that as he was getting back into bed, that his wife, Jill, asked him if everything was okay, and he said yes. Both he and Jill corroborated each other's stories about this incident and said that it had been between 3 and 3:30 a.m. The Walkers had answered all the questions the detectives had, and based on their emotional and verbal responses and the fact that their stories were consistent and the same, they came to the conclusion that no one in the home had anything to do with Emma's murder, which was good because now they could investigate other possibilities. But that kind of answers your question because you said, did anyone in the house hear anything? And they had, it was just because they were sleeping, it had been a misinterpreted sound.
Right. Now, right, for all we know, the door slamming could have been a gunshot of a small caliber, and they just didn't really, you know, that's kind of hard to recognize. Think about, like, during the 4th of July, sometimes certain fireworks sound like gunshots going off, right?
Yes.
So it makes you, like, it's cause for pause. You're like, I don't think that was a gunshot. And then you all of a sudden you see the sparks from the actual firework, and you're like, cool. So like sometimes a certain noise, especially when you're sleeping, it could be registered a certain way, but it's something completely different. But once again, though, a door shutting and a gunshot going off is still a different noise. I'm just trying to say.
But I think there are many factors involved. Plus, he was in a dead sleep.
Correct.
So it was a sound that woke him up, and your brain's trying to connect, well, what could that have been?
I've been there.
Yeah.
Like, remember the fire alarm?
Yeah.
And I thought, like, the end of the world was happening.
It, when you wake up, it causes panic, you know?
Correct. So, you know, it could be, I'm sure other people are like that too. So you would definitely misinterpret a sound.
Yes.
For sure.
So based on the gunshot wound that Emma had above her left ear, the detective theorized that the sound that Mark Walker had heard that night had been the gunshot that killed his daughter. And when he checked in on her, it looked like she was still sleeping because she had been in the sleeping position. And that meant that she had been killed instantly in her sleep. But that also leads to more questions. So Mark Walker heard that sound. He got up to check on his daughter. So where was the shooter?
That's interesting. You know, could this person have been, you know, lying in wait, you know, like a Richard Ramirez in the closet of her room, mm-hmm. or something like that? Or did she let a boy in through a window, climbed in? You know, I don't know. It is in the back of the house. It wouldn't be difficult. Don't ask me how I know that, because I've done that. You know,
you just gave yourself away.
I know. I got caught once, guys. I'm not going to lie. This was way before Kay. Got caught.
Oh my God.
I had to run out of the upstairs bedroom, and I, you know the thing that grows the vines on it?
A trellis.
Yeah, that thing. I climbed down that, snapped it, fell to the floor, and I went into my car and got out of there as fast as possible.
Yeah. Well, your car probably gave it away.
Of course. So. But I was dumb. Young and dumb. High school. But anyway.
So John's the worst criminal of all time.
Worst criminal of all time. Would not work. But yeah, but that is
not
a story.
Not a cat burglar.
No, that is not a story I would want my children to know one day. But anyway, I'm just trying to say the possibility of that is always on the table. So she could have let someone in, or someone was lying in wait for her. Maybe jealous boyfriend. Maybe somebody that doesn't like her at school. But the answers are at school, because they always are at school.
Most likely when a teenager is murdered, they are.
Yeah.
Especially if it doesn't have to do with the family. Now, when it came to the crime they were investigating and the scene they were observing, there were so many things that did not make sense. Usually when they had a victim that had been shot in their own bedroom, there would be additional evidence. There would be signs of a break-in, especially because the doors of the Walker home had been locked. This was something that was also confirmed by Mark Walker, because he had to unlock the doors to go to work, and then he locked them again before he left. So how did this person get in the house? It appeared as if no one had entered. There was also no sign of a struggle. It was like a phantom came in and committed this murder.
Yeah, I mean, it is strange. But like I said, are we dealing with a situation where our poor victim let someone in not knowing what would be, happen to her?
Right. Well, the detectives knew that this couldn't be true. Couldn't have been a phantom. There has to be a logical explanation to what happened. So the crime scene investigators and the detectives took another look at the scene, a complete dissection of the room. And that was when they found what they were looking for. After stripping Emma's bed down, they found what looked like a bullet hole in her wall. But it wasn't the kind of hole that would be made if someone shot Emma in the room and the bullet either hit the wall or ricocheted into the wall. No, this was entirely different. This hole went straight through the wall, but it had not come from the inside. Someone had shot from the outside into the house. The shot had gone through Emma's bedroom wall and struck her directly in the head.
So they must have just found the entry point from the outside. So that, oh my God. So someone knew that, obviously, that that's where she was sleeping. They must have canvassed or knew that ahead of time, because what are the odds of that even happening, right?
Very interesting, right?
Yes.
They had to have known where her bedroom was located.
It's kind of like the other case that we did.
Yes, for Patreon.
Yes.
But we don't want to give too much away.
No.
If you haven't listened yet, that was a great case.
It was.
The detective went outside the home. So let me set the scene for you. If you were to be facing the Walker home, you would be looking at a ranch home that has an attached, extended forward garage on the right-hand side. Emma's bedroom is on the other side of the house. So if you were to go around the left side of the house, you would find on that wall, exterior wall, a single window that is a little bit closer to the front of the house than the center of the siding. An air conditioning unit is situated against the siding of the home towards the back of the house. And finally, there is a wooden fence that extends from the back of the house through the entire back of the property. I have a Google Earth image of the home that I linked in the show notes so you can physically see what it looks like if you want to. Emma's bedroom was in the back corner of the home, right where the air conditioning unit was. They could see the shot was in the siding of the house. When the detectives searched the area around where the bullet hole was found, in the grass below, they found a 9mm spent casing from a handgun.
Okay. Huh. Interesting.
Now, the rest of the perimeter of the house was searched just in case other evidence had been left. Maybe a footprint, something like that. Well, in the back of the house, in the backyard, which is now inside the fenced-in area, there was another shell casing found. And it was just below another hole in the wall. Now, this was fired into the other wall of Emma's bedroom. So somebody had fired into Emma's room twice. And just for reference, so the wall of the back of the house and the side of the house both held two perpendicular walls of Emma's room. Her bed was situated in the corner of those two walls, and the shots were fired directly into where Emma's bed was. In fact, the shots were equal distance from the corner of the home and directly where Emma would lay her head at night if she were to be in bed.
That's too perfect. Mm-hmm. I mean, listen, I'm just saying right off the bat here, that is very odd. I'm telling you, someone has to know the layout of her house good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because someone just taking shots, obviously, yes. If there's a window, yeah, you think, okay, well, they have to be somewhere in that room. But to have those shots fired, I'm sure the way that they were, you know, where she would be sleeping, because you could have your bed up against the window, you could have it across from the window, mm-hmm. depending on the layout of the room, you know? So I don't know. You have to know that information. You can't just take a guess as to where someone's bed would be. And even if you did, you don't know where they're going to be facing.
The thought process that the detectives had. They were thinking the same thing as you. But first they have to go through their scenarios, right? Their probabilities. So if someone gets shot inside their home from a bullet outside of their home, it usually is a stray bullet from an accident, a hit and run incident. But this couldn't be true in Emma's case. The way the shots had been fired were calculated and exact. They had been trying to shoot the person who was in that bed. This also could not have been unintentional because the shooter had to have climbed the fence in order to get into the backyard because the backyard fence was locked. This also meant that the person who fired the gun, like you said, had to have intimate knowledge of the Walker home and the layout of Emma's bedroom.
Yeah, very strange. So let me just make sure I understand this correctly. So one casing was found close to the window and one was further away back towards the inside perimeter of the fence.
One, not towards the window, more towards the air conditioner because it was the back.
But what I'm saying is still very close to the corner of the side of the house.
Yeah, one bullet casing was found on the side of the house and the other was found in the backyard inside the perimeter of the fence.
Okay, that's even a little strange.
Mm-hmm. It seemed like they wanted to get her from wherever she was positioned in the bed.
Right. That's odd.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Okay.
When Emma's parents were asked about anyone who would have wanted to hurt Emma or anything odd that had happened to her, they said actually things had been strange lately. Emma had never had any problems, but recently there had been two what they called unusual events. The first of which occurred on Friday, November 18th. Just 2 days before her murder. That Friday night had been a playoff football game. After the game, Emma had gone to the house of a friend that was having a party where other teenagers from Central High School were in attendance. While she was at the party, Emma began receiving disturbing text messages from an unknown number around 11:30 p.m. She told her friend Zach about the messages and showed him. They read, "Come outside alone if you don't want to see a loved one get hurt." And then more messages came through. "Go to your car with your keys. Go alone. I've got someone you love. If you don't comply, I will hurt them." Emma's friend agreed to go outside with her because she was very bothered by the messages and they wanted to see what was happening. And they wanted to see what was going on. When they went outside, they saw nothing. So they returned and went back to the party.
I mean, that is very strange behavior. Because, I mean, who are these people? How did they even get her phone number? I almost feel like, is this like some other girl in her school, you know, trying to make it look like something that it's not? You know what I mean? Maybe she's talking to somebody's man or she's, you know, they're upset. I don't know. You know how girl drama is. I don't have to tell you.
I like that you immediately go to girl drama.
Well, because sometimes I feel like it's the most volatile.
Okay.
Because I feel like, I shouldn't say this. Men do this shit too. But I think that sometimes when it's, you know, female to female, things get
catty, can get.
Whatever you call it. I don't know what the right word is, but it can get a little crazy.
No, teenage girls can be vicious as well.
Yeah. It's like mean girls, you know?
Emma was reportedly crying about this incident because it scared her. Within minutes of the friends returning to the party, Emma received more messages. They read, "What do you not understand about coming outside alone?" And another message said, "He's in the ditch beside her house. It's a shame you can all of a sudden not value someone else's life." Emma's friend Zach asked her and others at the party if they should call the police. But many thought that it was a prank and that the police did not need to be called, especially because they were probably having a party. So Zach and Emma went back outside to see what was going on. When they did, they were able to make out a body lying by bushes on the side of their friend's driveway by the glow of the streetlight. Slowly, the male figure got up, and Zach and Emma recognized who it was immediately. It was Emma's on-again, off-again boyfriend and freshman in college, Riley Gall.
Okay. All right, so now we have someone of interest. This is maybe someone to look into.
Yeah.
Because if it's not the husband, it's always the on and off again boyfriend. That's just how it goes. So maybe we're on to something or not.
Well, let's get a little further into the incident because it's very odd and I think it's something that we should talk about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So Emma and Zach asked why he was there and he told them that he had no idea why he was there. Riley said he had been kidnapped. He was holding his head and he seemed very confused. He kept saying he had no idea how he got there. All three of them were very confused.
Yeah, me being number four, like, what is going on? So you're telling me they came outside after these weird text messages and then he's laying on the floor and then gets up and is like, "I've been kidnapped"? That is wild.
Yes. So apparently if we're going to listen to, like, if we're going to feed into the scenario of what happened.
Sure.
Emma's receiving text messages from an unknown number that they have someone she loves and that she has to go outside alone. But because she didn't go outside alone, they didn't hurt the person. They just dumped them. And it ended up being her on-again, off-again boyfriend of 2 years, Riley Gall. It's unbelievable. Situation and seems like an attempt
for attention
for Riley to gain attention from Emma, correct?
Yeah, that is weird.
Yes, very odd.
But what is a little unexplained here, though, is that if it's not a number that she recognized and it couldn't have been her on and again, off again boyfriend's phone, let's just say. So if he was setting this there, if he was setting this up for whatever reason, let's just say, because I am, like you said, going with it. Well, then there has to be a third person.
No, there's also apps that can be used.
Well, it's, what is it, 2016?
Yeah, so those apps were out there.
I mean, I guess you're right.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Never mind. Possible. I take that back. I take it back.
So I think that we'll understand more the more I reveal to you about this relationship.
Sounds good.
So Emma was crying and she had no idea what to think because it's all very confusing. And who wants to believe that someone would set up this weird, elaborate thing, you know? Emma had just broken up with Riley recently for what she told her friends was the final time. And although she was concerned for him, it was clear that she did not want to talk to him, even in this fake kidnapped scenario.
Good for her.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's an ick.
Yeah, I would say that's very strange. But it's also alarming behavior on his point.
Yeah, I agree.
Once Riley gained his bearings, he walked down the driveway of the friend's house and away from Emma and Zach. They heard him calling one of his friends to get him to possibly pick him up. So Emma and Zach, knowing that Riley was okay, went back inside.
Well, that was short-lived. Probably not the way he wanted that to go.
No, it seemed like he wanted her to come outside herself so he would be able to speak with her.
That's a massive red flag. I don't know. I don't like this at all.
No.
I don't like the direction of this. I mean, if he's really involved in this, which, I mean, I'm sure he is, because in my opinion, if you were just kidnapped and you got your bearings, wouldn't the first thing you do is be like, hey, I'll use my phone to call the police, or could I use your phone inside to call the police because I've just been kidnapped?
Right.
There's like a series of things that you would do. Yeah. Not say, okay, talk to you later. I'm going to call my friend up so I can get out of here. Like, what?
Yeah, and what, like, criminal enterprise, which, you know, like, who's really responsible for kidnappings like this, would kidnap your ex-boyfriend to get what from you?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. From a 16-year-old girl. She's not like a mogul, a
right, exactly.
Drug dealer.
There's no,
like, it's bizarre. It's so strange.
Right, no motive of money, no money mentioned at all for ransom or anything like that at all, so... What are they getting from this?
God. So the police would later talk to this friend that was called by Riley and Riley himself. According to both of them, Riley said that he had been carjacked, knocked out, and the next thing he knew, he had awoken on a, I guess you could say, front lawn slash driveway that he didn't know, and then Emma and Zach walked out. Noah said that he went to pick up Riley and that Riley did not want to call the police after this incident took place.
Of course not, because then he would be like filing a report that would make it legit and he would be lying.
Correct. He doesn't want to file a false police report.
Of course.
So this was certainly an unusual event. And the detectives had many questions about it, but their main question for the Walkers was, who was Riley Gall? And why had him and Emma broken up, and what was their relationship like? The Walkers didn't mince words when it came to their dislike for their daughter's ex-boyfriend, Riley. The couple had started dating when Emma was a freshman and Riley was a junior. At first, the pair seemed like the quintessential high school couple. Emma had been so proud of herself. Her hard work had paid off with competition gymnastics and dance. And she had made the varsity cheer team as a freshman, and she was the only freshman on the team. This is 2 years before her death. While on the team, she had caught the eye of one of the star football players, Riley Gall. The cheerleader and the football player, and both of them on the honor roll. They were the perfect couple. But soon the relationship between the two teens turned toxic. At first, Emma's friends thought that Riley didn't talk to them because he was shy. But as time went on, they realized that it was because he didn't want to get to know Emma's friends. It seemed that Riley wanted Emma all to himself. He was beginning to isolate her. And that he thought, since they were dating, that he had a right to control aspects of her life. Like who she talked to, when she talked to them, and what she would wear. His possessiveness and controlling behavior prompted many breakups. However, the couple always seemed to get back together.
Seems like these things always happen in high school, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, it is bad that he's trying to control her in such a way. And then him being older than her doesn't help the situation either.
There's definitely a power imbalance that exists.
Yeah.
So Emma's parents had not been huge fans of their daughter dating so young to begin with, so when the couple began to fight, they were really concerned. They had seen Emma's phone while she and Riley were fighting over Snapchat, and they saw a message from Riley to their daughter that said, "You're dead to me. I'll find your obituary. Fuck you."
Whoa, Riley. I mean, that's kind of crazy.
After that, they had a conversation. I apologize for cursing, guys. After that, they had a conversation with the two of them. And Riley told them that he only said that because he was angry. However, that was too much for the Walkers. And they banned Emma from being in a relationship or talking to Riley. And he was no longer allowed at the house.
Well, good.
Yeah. I think that if behaviors like this are already being exhibited in the beginning of a relationship, they're only going to get worse.
Yeah, but the only issue here now, though, is you're building another form of crazy, because what's going to happen now is, because even if she wanted to go back with him and do this on and off thing again, the parents don't approve. She, you know, so now you're creating this kind of vacuum where now he's going to do anything he can to get a moment with her, but it's not going to be easy at all.
Right.
You know, like, she's still living under her parents' roof, you know?
Well, I think it's going to be easier than you think, because teenagers, they are sneaky. And one thing that happens when you restrict something is it makes them want it more.
Right. But on both ends here, you know, like, he's going to actively seek it out more as well.
Well, and that is what happens.
And maybe that's why he's going to get crazier and crazier.
Well, this is earlier on in their relationship. Okay. So this is like a year in.
Okay.
So the incident in which we're talking about is 2 years in which they have what Emma told her friends was their final breakup.
Gotcha. Okay.
So this is just a year into their relationship.
Jeez.
The separation of the couple did not last long. Riley bought an iPad Touch for Emma, and the two of them spoke secretly on that device.
Wow, that's not good. See? I guess you're right.
Yeah. See? They're smart when they want to be teenagers. And they snuck around to meet each other. But at this point, the fighting was very bad, especially once Riley went away to college and Emma was still in high school. It was in November of Emma's junior year and Riley's freshman year that she finally broke up with him. For good, she told her friends. And they were overjoyed at this news. The detective found this information of the incident and the relationship very important, but the Walkers said there had been two unusual events. So what had happened next? So that Friday night of the party, after the texts from the unknown kidnapper were received, Emma stayed at the friend's house where the party had occurred. The following morning, Saturday, November 19th, Riley had plans to meet her mother out shopping. But first, she had to go home, shower, and change. As she pulled into her neighborhood, she saw a man dressed in all black walking through, I guess what you could call, like, her neighborhood. It's not necessarily closed off, but it's a series of streets that kind of run in a circle. It was something that unsettled her. So she got home as fast as she could, went inside, and made sure to lock the door, because she was home alone. Once she was inside, the doorbell began ringing continuously, and there was a pounding at the door. When she looked outside, she saw that it was the man dressed in all black. He was trying to get in the house. Terrified, Emma ran into her room and into a closet. She texted her friends, but they didn't get back to her right away. So she reached out to her ex-boyfriend, Riley Gall. She texted him and said, "I hate you, but I really need you right now," and explained what was happening. The two talked over FaceTime, and he replied that he was going to get there right away. So he said he was going to speed over. Meanwhile, because this was happening, Emma had failed to show up at the meeting with her mom at the time they had chosen. Her mother said that she had a feeling that something was happening. So she went home to check on her daughter. That's mother's intuition. When she got to the house, she found Emma in the driveway with Riley, and he was comforting her. She looked very upset. So when she got out of the car, they explained what had happened. Jill was concerned and told her daughter that they would handle it, but Riley had to leave because he was still not welcome in their home. Jill said that Riley said he understood and he left without incident. The following night, Emma was murdered in her bed.
That is very strange.
So what's going on here? The police thought the text messages Friday night were odd, most likely a prank done by Riley for attention. But this man in black, who had he been? Couldn't have been Riley if Emma had FaceTimed him. Was there a possibility that Emma had a stalker? And this stalker was trying to take advantage of the fact that she was alone in that moment on Saturday morning?
I mean, it's a possibility, right? I mean, right away, I'm thinking about like that movie. It's like Scream, where like, you know, you call the boyfriend up to come and help you, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I know. Yeah, it is Scream. It's the first movie of Scream.
Right. So it's like, okay. It's like kind of weird. It's like, is it possible for someone to do what they were doing and then take off whatever you were wearing and get on FaceTime and be like, I'll be right over, but yet you're right there? Is that possible? Or are we truly dealing with someone that has nothing? It has nothing to do with Riley, and it has everything to do with somebody else that might be stalking her. I mean, it is a good point, and it's something to look into.
So is he the killer or the red herring?
Exactly.
So once the police had heard about the incidents, they began to canvass the neighborhood and see if anyone had heard or seen anything that could corroborate what Emma said had happened to her. It took them a while, as there were a lot of houses to canvass in the development, but finally they got a lead. A woman who lived on the street that was adjacent to the Walker Street had captured some interesting images on her security camera. The camera was located in the corner of the woman's home, and it caught the entrance into the neighborhood. The police had asked her if she had caught a man in black walking into or out of the community, and she told them that she would look. Well, after combing through 4 hours of footage, she finally found what they were looking for. A man in all black walked into the neighborhood on Saturday morning, just around the time Emma pulled in as well. She called the police right away and sent them the video. It captured a man head to toe in black. His hood was up, he had on black gloves and a pair of sunglasses, so his face was not visible. This was clearly the man Emma had been talking about, because there's no way that someone's just going to go for a casual stroll dressed like that. And it did appear as if they were walking with a purpose, and they were walking in the direction of the Walker residence, and they were trying to conceal themselves. Now that police knew this person was real, they wanted to talk to Riley and hear his perspective about what happened that morning.
Good idea. Yeah.
Emma's friends have commented that they thought that after everyone found out about Riley's death and how she was murdered, that Riley's comments on social media were ones that they didn't agree with necessarily. He had not been a good boyfriend. They had a toxic on-again, off-again relationship, and he was making it sound like they had been perfect and that they were still in love. His bio on Instagram read, "Living every day through Emma Walker." His posts read, "I love you, beautiful, and I know that you're in a better place now." Another said, "I don't know what I'm going to do without you. Rest easy, sweetheart." Corinthians 13:8. "Be sure to remind God about our verse. I love you always and forever."
That's enough to make me throw up, the whole thing, especially if you're involved. I don't know what to think about this. Because, I mean, unless we find out more about Emma and how she conducted herself, not just, with her life, but also her life in school. Like, if we find out more, maybe there was somebody that was a little odd or that maybe paid a little bit too much attention to her, or if anyone had anything against her at all, other cheerleaders, other football players, other guys.
I think that the investigators are thinking there's no way that it's a coincidence that these two very odd, bizarre events, I guess we can call them,
happened
occurred back to back 2 days before she was murdered.
I agree.
And from what they are seeing so far in the investigation, the event on Friday was caused by Riley, right? He wanted attention from Emma. He wanted to be able to talk to her. She didn't want to speak to him because she had broken up with him and she was trying to stay firm on it. And that was his way of getting her to talk to him.
Right.
And then on Saturday, they're thinking, well, we did see a man in black in the neighborhood. So there are two events, potentially two different men. Which is the one that killed her?
Right. And then is there a way we could figure out if they're one and the same? Because it's, I feel like that's still not off the table.
Right. Well, that's why they need to talk to Riley Gall.
Yeah.
So Riley Gall agreed to go into the sheriff's station for an interview with detectives. They asked him what he recalled about that Saturday morning and if he remembered the man dressed in black. He said he remembered the incident well. They asked him how he knew that someone was at Emma's door. And he said to the detective, "The girl, she texted me." Well, this is an odd turn of phrase. So he made Riley clarify by asking, "Which girl?" He replied, "The one that passed away." Still thinking this was odd, the detective replied, "Oh, okay, what's her name?" "Emma," he finally said. But it took him like three times to say her name. Very strange.
That is weird.
If you are someone who studies interrogations, you would say that he's trying to put distance between himself and the victim.
Which makes no sense because you are an ex-partner to this, to the girl that's been...
And look at the posts you've been posting.
Exactly.
You're living your life through Emma
Walker.
Here
you are, Corinthians verse 8, you know, 13:8.
Yeah.
You know, and now all of a sudden, the girl. Like she meant nothing to him.
Yeah. He then went on with the story. He said, "She texted me and she was kind of acting frantic over the phone. And she said someone was trying to get into her house and that they were dressed in all black and she thought they had a face mask on. She told me that she saw them and she thought they were taking a walk in the neighborhood. But when she passed by, they put on a pair of sunglasses and started like speeding up. So she went into the garage of her house as fast as possible and they went to her front door and were banging on it and ringing the doorbell and trying to get in." He went on to say that at first Emma asked if it was him, and he said it was not. So she FaceTimed him, and he could see how scared she was, so he rushed there. He said he had seen a man in black running away from the residence, but his main focus was on getting to Emma and seeing if she was okay. The detective asked Riley why Emma would have thought at first the man in black was him, and he said because they had broken up and that he was trying to get her back and she thought that maybe he was playing a prank on her, and really she probably thought that because of the incident the night before. Riley went on to say during the interview that Emma had broken up with him for good and that she made it clear she didn't want him back. He directly said, "She just kept saying no. She said she didn't care about the relationship anymore. She said she cared about me, but didn't care to be with me anymore." In the middle of their conversation, Riley said, "I hope to God I'm not a suspect in this murder." And the detective said, "Did I say you were?" And he replied, "Good, because I would hurt myself before I would hurt that girl." In the middle of the interview, the detectives took a bit more of a deeper look into Riley. And they found out that the statement that he made was eerily true. It seemed that earlier that fall, when Emma had first broken up with Riley Gall, he had attempted to die by suicide by ingesting prescription drugs and alcohol. Later, both Riley and Emma's friends said that whenever Emma would break up with Riley or would talk about it with him, he would threaten to die by suicide. And that time, he actually made an attempt. And that is when someone threatens to die by suicide when you're trying to break up with them, it is seen as another form of manipulation.
Oh, yeah. A very scary way to manipulate someone, too. I mean, you're putting your life in their hands, and it's just, that's not right.
And during their digging, the police wanted to see if Riley had a criminal history. And they found out that the 18-year-old did not have a criminal history, which didn't surprise them because of his young age. but they did find that both his mother and grandfather did. And just an aside, Riley had been raised by his mother and his grandparents. Okay, so back to the interview. Next, the detectives asked Riley if he knew anyone who would want to hurt Emma. He said that he didn't know anyone who would have ever wanted to hurt that girl. Again, not calling her by her name.
He keeps doing that.
Yes. Next, the detective decided to put the pressure on a bit and asked him if he thought that maybe someone was mad at Emma because of what was happening between the two of them. Like, is there anyone that would have wanted to hurt Emma on your behalf or scare her? And now they're going to pull into it the fact that his grandfather and mother have a criminal history. So the detective says, like, would your grandfather or mother have done that? Were they mad at Emma for breaking up with you and maybe being the catalyst to your suicide attempt?
I see. Okay.
And he said, no, no one would do that. No one in his family would shoot into a house. It was at that point that the interview ended and Riley was taken out to where his mother was waiting. The detectives asked Riley's mother if she would give a statement as well, but she refused and left the police station with her son.
Well, that's probably just because of their past, probably, of not wanting to deal with police, at least the mother's response to that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the fact that Riley's mother refused the statement and had a criminal past was something that got back to Emma's family. And when they learned this, on top of what they had seen her post on Facebook the night before Emma was murdered, they grew concerned and reached out to the detective handling their daughter's case. Apparently on Saturday, in reference to Emma's breakup with Riley, Riley's mother made a post that read, "If you mess with my son, I'm going to come after you." The Walkers felt as if this was suspicious timing. However, it was never confirmed if this was meant like towards Emma or like towards like Riley's fake kidnapping attempt situation.
I mean, yeah. I don't know. You know, like, I don't think so.
Because think about it. He told his friends that happened. He might have told his mother that happened as well.
I mean, I guess. But it does seem a little odd.
Yeah.
And if it was directed at Emma, that's even worse.
Right. And it does not look good for the Gall family.
No, it doesn't.
Either way, it was an ominous post. Could she have thought that Emma was responsible for her son being upset and his suicide attempt? But before detectives could act on that lead, they received a phone call. But as detectives were looking further into Riley's mother, they received a phone call. This phone call came from an officer in their department, one that had not been involved in any way in the investigation thus far, who asked them if they were the detectives investigating the death of the high school student. They confirmed that they were, and the officer told them that he had something that might be of use to them. 1 week ago, a man had come in to report a 9mm handgun was stolen from his house, which this officer knew was the weapon responsible for the shooting. And the man that had reported the gun missing was Riley's grandfather.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew it. And now, this is probably the worst part about this. They have criminal records, right?
Yes.
Well, most likely they probably can't own
a gun.
Well,
he can.
Oh, he can?
Yes. So this was a registered weapon to the grandfather. He didn't commit a felony.
Oh, I see. Okay. But still, I knew you were going to say that. Mm-hmm. I had a feeling. Okay.
Now, this is interesting because it's not just Riley who's under suspicion right now. It's also his mother. Could she have taken the weapon and used it at a later date? Because the time of the weapon going missing kind of coincides with the suicide attempt.
Okay. That's a possibility. But the only thing that's making me not think that is does the mother know the layout of the property? Like, she's never been inside the house, right?
That I do not know. So okay. I don't want to answer.
Okay. I'm just trying to say, I think that if we're looking at both of them right now, Riley would have a better
understanding of the
land. Yeah.
100%. Because he was definitely in there many times.
Right. Whereas she most likely has not been, or maybe even if she, you know, maybe one time wouldn't even be enough, you know? So right. I don't know.
The police got a search warrant for Riley's grandfather's house, mainly to look for the weapon, but they were unable to find it. However, they found the box that the gun had been shipped in, and inside they were able to retrieve spent shell casings. They compared those spent shell casings with the ones found at the scene. They were a match. Riley's grandfather's missing gun was the confirmed murder weapon.
That is a very big deal.
Now the question was, who in the family had used it?
Right.
As the detectives worked to build their case and hoped it would point them in the direction of the correct family member, the answers that they sought fell in their lap. The detectives received another phone call, but this time from two of Riley Gall's friends, one of whom was the one he had called to pick him up after that bizarre Friday night incident. They were scared. They didn't want to take part in anything that they thought was going on. They wanted to do the right thing. According to them, they had always been concerned about Riley because he had seemed obsessed and unstable when it came to his relationship and feelings towards Emma. They said that in the beginning, they didn't think that he could have hurt Emma because to them, he just seemed so obsessed. And how clueless teenage boys can be. Now, they had thought that until Riley called one of them and confessed that he had been one of the ones to steal, that he had been the one to steal his grandfather's gun.
Okay, so the friends called up and pretty much ratted out Riley by saying Riley took the grandfather's gun.
Correct.
Okay, well.
But it's not over. That's not really the reason why they called.
Okay.
Riley had told the friend that he had done it for his own protection, but now he had to get rid of it, and he wanted the friend to help him get rid of this gun. So his friend was terrified about this, so he reached out to the other friend, and the two of them kind of came to the conclusion, like, no, we have to call the police, and we have to kind of, like, figure this out, make this right, or else we're going to be accessories to whatever's happening here.
Finally, someone using their brain.
This is good, right?
Good job, kids.
They let the detectives know that they would do whatever they could to help them find out what happened to Emma. They said they knew that this was all wrong and they didn't want to be a part of it. Smart thinking.
Very smart.
A plan was hatched. But now they're like put in the worst position possible. The boys would wear audio devices and have camera devices set up in their home to record Riley talking about having the gun and getting rid of it. What they said they really wanted was to get eyes on the gun in Riley's hand. Now, it was not lost on the boys or the detectives how dangerous this situation was. If Riley had done this, then he was capable of murder. So what would he do if he found out his friends were betraying him and he had a gun on him? The detectives assured the boys that they would be close by, and the second they used the safe word, whether they said or texted it, they would move in right away. The plan the boys had set up with Riley was for him to come over to one of their houses. Then they would go get something to eat, and then they would get rid of the gun. The boys were wearing audio devices when Riley showed up, and there was a camera hidden in one of their key fobs, which they set down on the table right in front of the spot where Riley would always sit to play video games. As predicted, Riley sat in his usual spot in front of the camera, where police were watching him the whole time. The instructions to the boys were to act normal, but to try to get information out of him. On the recording, Riley can be seen heard saying, "I don't know who shot Emma. I don't know who did it. I would never hurt her a day in my life. I had that gun because I was scared about what would happen. I know you don't believe me." And he was like looking at one of his friends when he said this. One of the boys responds, "I believe you didn't shoot Emma." Obviously, they're trying to make Riley feel more comfortable, at ease, to make him think that they were on his side and that they were going to help him get rid of the gun. Next, Riley said, "If they find the gun and it matches, it wouldn't." Next, Riley said, "If they find the gun and try to match it, it wouldn't. And then his friend cut in and said, so why not just give them the gun if it wouldn't match? And Riley said, it just needs to be gone. And his friend responded, I guess, man, but it sounds like you're getting rid of cold, hard proof that you didn't do it. Riley then said he wanted to go to the bluffs and throw it into the water so no one would ever find it. And he's referencing throwing it into basically the Tennessee River. One of the friends brought up the fact that it's hard to reach the water, and Riley assured him that he'd be able to throw the gun far enough to reach the river, and that the police would never find it. Riley told his friends that he knew it was scary and they didn't have to come if they didn't want to, but they reassured him that they had his back.
Wow. I mean, I think these two kids have a have a future in
acting.
Yeah, for sure.
This is so tense to do at 18 years old.
Yeah, for real. Especially with, like they said, I mean, this is someone that is looked at to be the prime suspect in the killing of Emma.
Yeah, so, and like, this is their best friend.
Yeah.
So once they left the one friend's house, they went to Riley's stepfather's house, where he went inside and he came out with a white pillowcase full of things. The friends didn't see the gun at this point, so they couldn't text the safe word. By the way, they had the detective saved in their phones under the girls' names.
Smart. Mm-hmm. What was the safe word?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, damn it. All right.
I feel like I heard it once and I didn't remember. It's something casual that wouldn't be like known by Riley if they like say it or text it, you know?
Yeah, it's not like flamingo.
No, it's not. Holy flamingo. That's a gun. So on the way to the bluffs, the three friends stopped to get fast food that they ate in the car. Then they drove to an apartment complex next to the bluffs, which you park at to get to this location, I guess. Riley was still finishing his food and he put it up on the dashboard. He then leaned down and pulled the gun out of a pillowcase. The boys said their stomach dropped, and they both casually pulled out their phones and texted the detectives. In case the messages didn't go through, one of the friends made sure to say close to the wire he was wearing, oh shit, that's a real gun. And he did that because he was just like nervous, you know?
Yeah, of course.
And wanted the police to know it's there, they saw it, they want to get out of this situation now. But he didn't have to do that because once the police received the text messages, they were already moving in. The boys said that waiting for the police to arrive was the longest couple of minutes they ever had to experience. But before they knew it, they were surrounded by police cars in the parking lot, and they were being asked to step out of the vehicle. Riley Gall was arrested without incident. Inside the pillowcase was the gun, but also a black hoodie, black pair of pants, and black tennis shoes.
He was the guy.
It appeared that Riley Gall was the man in black, too.
Yep. Wow.
So when he couldn't get Emma alone with his plan Friday night, he went to do it the next morning.
He created a scenario where she reached out for his help.
And would need him.
Yep. That's sick.
Very sick. And shows how dangerous he is.
Oh, my God, yeah.
See, sometimes, and this is the trouble, and it's very difficult to try and talk to teenagers about this. It doesn't need to be a physically abusive relationship to turn violent.
Yes, I know what you mean. Like, there's been too much emphasis on the physicality part of it, right, and not the other stuff that is present all the time in these relationships.
Correct. There have been red flags from the beginning. His obsessive, controlling behavior. He was trying to isolate her from her friends and her family. He was defying the rules and the boundaries set by her parents. When she would try to break up with him, he would threaten to die by suicide. He was trying to manipulate her in that regard. And when she finally cut him off, he was trying these drastic measures to get her attention and get her to speak to him. And when that still wasn't working, he killed her.
I'm sure it was something along the lines of, if I can't have her, then nobody else will, kind of deal, which is sometimes how these people are when they start doing things in absolutes and speaking in absolutes.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that's when it gets extremely dangerous. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. On April 30th, 2018, Riley's trial for Emma's murder began after a year of him being on house arrest. His defense team claimed that Riley had shot into Emma's bedroom, but had not intended to kill her, just to scare her. They were claiming that this was another attempt of Riley scaring Emma so she would reach out to him and need him.
I don't know how much I believe that.
Right. The prosecution claimed that this was impossible because the shots were placed in a strategic way. It was planned. It was calculated. He knew that's where her body would be.
And he shot twice.
He shot twice and he had to climb a fence to do it.
To do it. Exactly.
Twice, because he had to climb the fence to get into the backyard and then climb the fence to leave it.
And just like another case we've covered, I'm saying the same thing. It's like it doesn't matter what the intent was. You still shot into a room where you knew someone would be sleeping.
You fired a gun into a house. So you have to know that there's a possibility you're going to murder somebody.
And it doesn't matter if that possibility is 1% or 100%. You still are taking that. Yeah. You're taking that risk.
But in this case, it's extremely calculated by the positioning of the shots.
Yes.
On May 8th, 2018, Riley Gall was found guilty of first-degree murder. And in addition to that, he was found guilty of stalking, reckless endangerment, theft, and tampering with evidence. He was sentenced to 51 years in prison and most likely will be in prison for the rest of his life.
I mean, it's crazy. I just don't understand how these things can happen like this.
It's a very sad case. And I think that there's no way that the defense's case holds water. I think he already did his two desperate measures. And when they didn't work, this was his final thing. That if she's not going to talk to me and she doesn't want to be with me anymore, then I'm going to do that final act of control and I'm going to take her life from her. Because I think he believed that her life did belong to him.
And it's really sad too, because, I mean, you have the parents of Emma that did everything that parents are supposed to do.
They did do everything right.
They did everything right. And that's why sometimes it just truly doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Unfortunately. But I mean, you can't turn around in this case and be like, well, the parents should have done this. Like, there's nothing. They did everything.
And Emma didn't do anything wrong.
No, and
either.
Emma did nothing wrong. I think Emma was just a child, you know, and still trying to navigate these very complex issues.
And years of our lives.
Yeah.
And I think she did eventually, you know, make that decision for herself that she wanted to be happy, especially in her final years of school, because it was taking a toll on her. She was considering leaving the cheering team. She maybe wasn't necessarily performing the way that she usually did when it came to her academics. And, you know, that wasn't herself. So she decided to make the decision to break up with him. And like we hear over and over again, in a domestic violence situation, whether these kids are 16 years old or 60 years old, when someone's trying to leave their abuser, and an abuser in any capacity, this is the most dangerous time in that person's life. And I think that's what we saw here.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's really sad.
And I'm glad they got him on the stalking charge, because that's important too, to recognize that that's a crime and we need to prosecute people for doing things like that so it can be on the books and be stopped, because it used to not even be a crime.
Which is insane, because you have people literally like looking into people's windows and doing insane things. I mean that's crazy.
Right.
Ooh. This is...
You didn't know it was going to go in that direction.
No, I did not.
This case is all over the place, from the way that this poor girl was murdered versus the crazy weekend the last weekend she had of her life. It's like crazy. And the detectives are actually lucky that they received the phone calls they did from the... Thank God the grandfather reported the gun missing.
Yeah.
And thank God these friends called that in.
Yeah, I think ultimately they would have... I mean, I think they knew that Riley had some kind of involvement, in my personal opinion, but I don't think they had what they needed to really get him on anything. So I think that's why it was so important for those phone calls and for those things to come, and for those people to come forward.
To see him in possession of the gun.
Right.
Was very important.
And getting caught trying to get rid of evidence.
Right.
So it was perfect, and they got really lucky with that.
I agree. Okay. Before we go, what we want to do is we want to say a huge thank you to our new supporters on Patreon. So thank you, Troy Dittamore, Lauren Blake, Samantha Jackson, Ellen Haynes, Danny Rodriguez, Hope Rose, Victoria Cullen, Stephanie Cody, Maggie May, Andy Williams, V, Levita Pankritz, Emily Kay, Amanda Bradshaw, Yvonne Robinson, Hazel Armstrong, Erica Davis, Jeffrey Miller, Elizabeth Phillips, Dawn Miller, Whitney Pies, Emily LaCassie, Kelsey Cagle, Ariel Thatcher, SD, Jeannie, Chantel Munoz, Melissa Moore, Lauren, Carolyn Ryan, and Tara. Until next time, guys, don't park next to vans.
Bye, guys.
Bye.